You're listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. My name is Lynn, and today I want to talk about the silence that people that are sexually assaulted experience. When we're children, we don't know that we are allowed to speak up. And so today's show, I'm going to talk about secrets, about why children don't tell, why parents don't tell, why neighbors and so on. We're going to talk a little bit about what happens when we find out that our silence was pointless. Because sometimes we use silence to try to protect other people, and that's not always the case. And then I'm going to give you a little bit of hope about who you can tell and why and when you can tell. To start off, when you think of someone that was sexually assaulted when they were a child, I want you to understand that silence, meaning the children not telling, if the children do tell, the parents don't tell, no, it's not discussed further kind of thing. Silence is like Thanksgiving for the predators. Aggressors count on children not telling. You know, sometimes aggressors will say, "You can't tell anybody what we do." And sometimes they don't. Because many times children are so confused by what's happening to them that they don't know this is something they should tell. One of our other radio shows, we talk about why kids don't tell. And sometimes it's simply a matter of they are so young that they don't know they're supposed to. Many times an adult is the aggressor, and children don't know that an adult can make a mistake. Obviously, an intentional, very big mistake, but children don't know that yet. They haven't learned that yet. So silence is like Thanksgiving for the predators. It's their secret, you know. Many times the aggressor will say, "This is something that we do because you're special to me. This is something that's just between us. I love you in a way that nobody else loves you." And they will make comments to the child, or they will give, you know, thoughts and ideas to the child that this is a special relationship and that it's a secret because it's a good thing. And when I talk with children who have not been assaulted, or if they have and I'm unaware of it, I emphasize to children there's a difference between a secret and a surprise. A secret is when you don't tell something, and when the person finds out, they're going to be upset. A surprise is when you don't tell something, and when the person finds out, they're going to be happy. So I encourage children to tell secrets, but keep surprises. To my knowledge, there's never been, and I'm sure there has been, but to my knowledge, no predator commonly says, "This will be a surprise for mommy later." You know, speaking of the abuse, oftentimes the aggressors say, "This will be our secret. This is just between us. You're my special kid, and this is just between us," kind of thing. And the aggressors do that because they want to be in charge of the child. They want to be in control of the child. And they end up being in control of the entire family. I've seen many times where a child will tell, and for example, they tell the mom, "Dad's been doing something to me." And again, these are just for examples. I'm not saying that the aggressor is always male. I'm not saying the aggressor is always dad. Bear with me for the point of an example. Child may say, "Mom, Daddy's been doing something to me." And mom doesn't know what to do. Mom isn't sure if she believes it. Mom is struggling with, could this actually be true? Could this really be happening? that kind of thing. And mom doesn't know what to do. So she might not talk to other kids in the same household to find out if anything's happening with them. She might not even talk to that child further. She might say, "I'm glad you told me, I'll handle it." And oftentimes mom doesn't handle it. She doesn't know what to do. And again, only giving examples. It could be a babysitter, you know, and the child discloses to a father. It could be a mom being aggressive and the child discloses to a teacher. I'm just trying to use examples. Sometimes kids won't tell what's happening because they think, if I don't tell, and I keep letting this happen to me, then I'll be able to protect my mom. I don't want my mom to find out. I know it would upset her. I know it would hurt her. And I don't want my mom upset. I don't want my mom hurt, so I'm not going to tell. I have talked with so many women who have said, my dad or stepdad or uncle or whoever it was doing something to me, and I didn't tell because I knew if he kept doing it to me, then he'd leave my little sister alone. And then after years of sexual abuse and lots of chaotic and dysfunctional relationships, these women get to a point where they disclose. I need to tell my family what's been happening. I can't take it anymore. I'm not keeping his secret anymore. And most often they discover other family members have also been keeping it a secret to try to protect them. And it is so common. I hate to say it. It really is so common, especially for sisters, to try to protect each other. You know, she was my little sister and I didn't want him doing that to her. So I figured if I just kept letting him do it to me, then he would leave her alone. And 10, 15 years later, she finds out, the little sister says, "Well, he was doing it to me, but I didn't want him to do it to you. So I never said anything because I figured if he did it to me, he would leave you alone." And that's where, you know, secret versus surprise. If you're keeping a secret because somebody's going to be upset, that is the most important time to tell. Sometimes a child will disclose to a teacher and the teacher has no idea what to do. You know, if I talk to Children's Services, this could destroy this family. Or the teacher may not believe what's been happening. Especially, you know, in a case where the girl, and again, I'm using girl instead of boy, it happens with boys as well. But if a girl is kind of promiscuous and she's flirty and she dresses provocatively, the teacher might think, well, you know, she's like that, so she's just trying to get somebody in trouble. Or if the girl, you know, dresses really mousy, if I may use that term, you know, very modest, you know, doesn't say a whole lot, isn't real interested in boys, makes a comment like that, is it a cry for attention? And sometimes teachers will process why the child is telling to determine whether or not they believe the child or if it could be true or what to do if it is true. And they forget what is being told to them. You know, children typically do not go around saying that they were sexually assaulted if they actually were, just for the heck of it. In fact, more children do not disclose than the number of children who lie about it. I'm not sure if I made that easy to understand. Basically, the number of kids that make it up and lie about it and say it's happening when it's not is insignificant compared to the number of children that are sexually assaulted that never tell. And that's really, really sad. It's a harsh statistic, and it's really sad. Sometimes children will talk to a pastor or, you know, somebody in a religious atmosphere, a congregation, something along those lines, and pastor, minister, you know, counselor within the church, whatever, they don't know what to do. They know the family, they know it's a good family, they know this will destroy the family. And again, many times they look at, why is this child telling me this, instead of looking at the information that's being told. And I guess I'd compare it to if a child ran into the room and said, hey, you know, there's a fire. We don't usually question, why are they telling us there's a fire? You know, are they seeking attention? Are they trying to be, you know, a hero? We typically assume there's a fire. And we listen to the information that's given. With sexual assault, it seems to be the great unknown. It seems to be the thing that people want more information before they do anything further about it. And I can see that as appropriate sometimes when you are gathering all your facts and figuring out who do we talk to next, what's the next appropriate step. But when a child discloses, they need to be believed and they need to be appreciated for coming forward and saying what has been happening. Even police sometimes, you know, the child will, again, for an example's sake, child will tell the mom, this guy did something to me. Mom gets a hold of the police, says, this guy did something to my daughter. And sometimes, and I'm not saying all the time, and I'm not saying often, but sometimes the police will feel it's a family matter. You know, in my case, one of my cases, when the police actually got involved, they said that they understood that it was a difficult situation. They told me, I was 13 at the time, they told me that this person wasn't going to harm me anymore, that they talked with him and they told him that he is to leave me alone and that it was a family matter and that our family had handled it and it was over and done. Now, please keep in mind, this was in 1978 or 79, and things are drastically different with law enforcement nowadays. The strides that they've made to be more understanding to what the children are going through, to be more understanding to what the families are experiencing, and the absolute chaos that comes about when, especially if it's a parent that's doing the abusing, just how families are ripped apart. And it's sad and it's scary, and no one wants to be, you know, the, where they say, don't shoot the messenger. Nobody wants to be the one who shows up and says, hey, your child disclosed this information to me and we're going to need to, you know, take some action, because families are destroyed. And the important thing is that wasn't much of a family to destroy. You know, if one of the parents is sexually assaulting one of the children, that's not a good family anyway. So for law enforcement, religious figures, teachers, counselors, I promise you, you're not breaking up a happy family if a child has disclosed that they're being sexually assaulted. What you're doing is you're bringing to light a horrible secret that is harming this child, most likely harming other children within the family that are being assaulted. And it's a family divided. If I'm keeping a secret to protect my sister, then, you know, later I might hold a grudge against my sister because she doesn't know what I went through to keep her safe. Whereas if the abuse is disclosed, not only does my sister know that I was trying to keep her safe, but I find out that he was, you know, dad was doing it to her as well. She was trying to keep me safe. So we end up with a stronger bond as sisters than if neither one of us had ever disclosed. I tell people the truth is always better than a lie. And I don't care how much money's involved. I don't care what kind of lifestyle is involved. If a child is being sexually assaulted, that must be disclosed. It must be stopped. And as adults, if we are not comfortable dealing with how to handle it, if we're not comfortable being the messenger who says, hey, your child disclosed to me, then we need to be mature enough and we need to love these children enough to find somebody that we can tell who will be the messenger who says, your child disclosed, we need to take action to protect your child. And I know that's a hard thing to think about, but we're talking about children that are sexually assaulted. You know, some of these children haven't even learned how to ride bikes yet. Some of these children haven't learned how to successfully fly a kite, you know, or maybe they're struggling with roller skates or rollerblades. And yet, as adults, we expect them to know how to handle a situation that is beyond sometimes our own understanding. I know a situation where a lady was trying to be protective of a little boy that was in her care. He needed to use the restroom, and she needed to use the restroom. She didn't want to take him in the women's. She didn't know what to do about letting him go to the men's on his own. And so she told him, you know, if anyone's in there, if anyone touches you at all, I want you to scream. I want you to punch him, kick him, you know, hit him, and come running out to me. And that's good advice, but reality is when we are under attack or perceived attack, our bodies have several options. Most people are familiar with fight or flight response. When we're under stress, when there's an emergency, when a bear, I'll give you a good example, when a bear comes after you, you can either run away, which is flight, or you can try to figure out how to fight against a bear, you know, and overpower it and get away. But there's also freeze response. There's actually three: fight, flight, or freeze. And when something like sexual assault happens, it is usually very subtle. It's not like someone grabs your child. And there's a difference between stranger rape and sexual assault, which is most often somebody, you know, it could be rape, where it's somebody that the child knows that is doing the assaulting, the raping, the aggressor. And many times it is so subtle that the child will freeze. And it's exactly like what it sounds. They can see and hear what's going on. They can, you know, smell fragrances in the room. You know, all of their senses are intact, but they can't move. And one of the times when I was raped, that happened to me. I froze. And looking back, I certainly had, again, hindsight's 2020. Looking back, I can see where I had opportunities to get away, but I couldn't move. It wasn't a matter of fight or flight. I could not physically move. And I remember that he had to move me where he wanted me to, because I couldn't move anything. I couldn't move my arms. I couldn't speak. I couldn't do anything. So when we're telling children, if X, Y, and Z happens, I want you to scream. If they have the ability to scream, that is wonderful advice. But what you need to understand, the subtlety with which it happens oftentimes puts children in a mode of freeze where they simply cannot respond. They cannot fight back. They cannot scream. They cannot get away, even if they have the means to get away. They're simply frozen and subject to whatever's happening. Sometimes when children disclose, again, we're going to use the mom and dad scenario. The parent that finds out that it's happening, they will have guilt because they weren't able to keep it from happening. They may not have the money or the resources to get away, especially if it's in a parent assaulting a child or a step-parent assaulting a child situation where both parents are dependent on each other for the income, or if, you know, mom's dependent on dad for income, she's a stay-at-home mom, finds out the children are being sexually assaulted, it can be overwhelming to come up with the resources and the means to get the children away from him to protect them. Here in Columbus, Ohio, we have a program called Choices, and it's for victims of domestic violence. And we have had many women, and also some men, but we've had many women literally walk away from everything that they own with the clothes on their back, if they're lucky, maybe an extra diaper for the baby kind of thing. They leave all of their possessions, sometimes even cars, and they just leave because it's the only way to get away and have a place to go. And then, of course, when it gets into, you know, the divorce or settling up, if they weren't married, if it's just a matter of settling up property and things like that, you know, they sometimes get stuff back and sometimes they don't even bother. It's just, it's too horrific to go back. So when you understand the dynamics of what happens to a family when it's disclosed, it can be legitimately overwhelming for teachers, religious figures, police, counselors, whomever, to know what's the right next thing to do. Because these people don't have any money, dad's the only one working, you know, where's mom going to take the kids? If they throw dad out, is he going to harass them? Is he going to keep coming back? Is he going to pay the bills so they can stay there and he goes somewhere else? And it's just, it's really big and really overwhelming really fast. Anyone that's gone through sexual assault as the parent or as the guardian of the child, you already know what I'm talking about. And I hope hearing me talk about it helps you to understand that you're not the only one. It is this difficult and you are doing the right thing. You know, sometimes when police, again, teachers, religious figures, whatever, when they find out, okay, you know, the child says so-and-so touched me and so-and-so is not allowed around that child again, you know, maybe it was a uncle, cousin, babysitter, whatever, that person's not allowed around the child, many times people will think, problem's over. That child is safe. This is resolved. But if you think that way, you're actually putting some of the blame on that child, because rape and sexual assault, especially of children, it's true anytime, but especially with children, is all about power and control. And if you, again, as an example, let's say a child is sexually assaulted or raped by a cousin, and mom and dad say that cousin is not coming to our house, you are not going anywhere that cousin will be. If there's a family reunion, that cousin is no longer invited. you know, whatever. But if you think that ends it, then you think there was something about that particular child that made that rape or sexual assault happen. And that is completely untrue. Rape and sexual assault do not happen because of who the victim is. It happens because of who the aggressor is. I've been through a lot in my life, and I joke with people. I say, you know, I've been hungry enough to steal, though I haven't done it. I've been angry enough to kill, though I haven't done it. But I have never, and I've been really lonely, I've never been in a position to even consider a child as an outlet for my sexual desires. Never. And bear with me a second. I've been real horny sometimes. I've been real lonely sometimes. I've never looked at a child that way because that's not within me. You know, I might, you know, see Harry Connick Jr. or somebody and be like, ooh, you know, have a thought or two. But a child is a child. And anyone that looks at a child as if that child is something to be desired, something to be sexualized, that's about what's going on in the head of the aggressor. Children are not sexy. I don't care how you dress them up. I don't care about your beauty pageants and your tiaras and all that. Children are not sexy. And people who look at children in a sexual way are people that have something wrong with their thinking. It is not the fault of the child that someone looks at a child that way. It is the fault of the person looking. I don't know if I've emphasized that enough. I don't know if I made that clear. I've heard people that are gay say, you know, a gay man will say, I look at men as a lover, and I'm not attracted to women that way. People that look at children that way, it's all about power. It's all about wanting to have a thing to release your sexual desires to. Being gay is who you're interested in. Being a pedophile is about your power struggles. It's about wanting to control something or someone else. And I say something because sex offenders, especially pedophiles, they don't look at children as human beings. They look at them as objects. You know, many times women are saying, you know, we don't like being objectified, but we end up letting our children be objectified by the way we dress them, the music we let them listen to, the songs we let them sing out loud. There's some song out now, Shake It Off or whatever, and everybody's shaking their butts on YouTube videos and things like that. Whatever. If that's your thing, whatever. But I've seen parents have made videos with their children that way. And it's just sickening. Because you're making your child something to be looked at as a sexual object. And there are people that will argue with me and say, no, Lynn, it's just cute. We're just being silly. Well, keep in mind, your child doesn't understand the difference between just being silly and being sexually objectified. When a neighbor wants to play with your daughter, and I'm not talking about you know, in a childish way, when a neighbor wants to touch your daughter sexually, if you have taught your daughter that it's adorable when she shakes her butt, that it's cute when she looks behind herself and wiggles her butt and smiles at you, then when the neighbor wants to play with her, the neighbor is just eaten up the fact that this little girl does these things that makes her more sexual in that aggressor's eyes. I've talked before, people seem to forget that children don't know the things that adults know. So if you put your 6-year-old in a skimpy bathing suit with a sash that says Miss Universe, and you let that be her Halloween costume, and you go trick-or-treating, and one of the neighbors wants to take pictures. Oh, she's so cute. Let me have a picture. Okay, really? You want a total stranger to have a picture of your child in a swimsuit? That's just weird. And, you know, I'm not talking about grandma wanting a picture of your child dressed up like a clown, or, you know, grandpa wants a picture of little Susie dressed up, you know, in her Yogi Bear outfit, or I'm trying to think of something current. Sorry, I'm old. But, you know, Halloween costumes, funny videos, you know, playing jokes. Children don't understand that stuff. And when you introduce those things at too early of an age, you really confuse children. And then when something happens sexually to them, they don't understand it. And they don't know what to do because, you know, mommy made that funny video of me shaking my butt and singing along to that song, and it was goofy, and the dog was barking, and my brother jumped in and photobombed me and then jumped back out, and mommy told him to leave me alone because we were doing a silly video. How's that different than, you know, the registered sex offender who lives 4 houses down saying, hey, little girl, come over and we'll make a video and it'll be fun? I mean, what's the difference? As an adult, you can say, well, there's a really big difference. I've got news for you. As a child, that's the same thing. That's an adult saying, let's make a funny video. And I don't really get it, but it's kind of fun, but I don't really like it. And it can be very confusing to kids. And when we confuse children, we ensure that they will remain silent because they don't know if they've done something wrong and that's why it feels weird. They don't know if they're going to get in trouble. You know, mommy and I made that funny video and she showed it to grandma and she showed it to daddy and she showed it to Aunt Sue and she showed it to Uncle so-and-so. But when the neighbor made the video with me, he told me it was a secret and he was going to show people that he knew and he really liked it. But he wasn't going to show my mom because it was going to be a secret. Well, okay. You know, and sometimes he won't even say it's a secret. Sometimes he'll just do a video of your child and not express to them that it's a secret. You know, if I could give every parent in the world one bit of advice, it is think about what you knew and what you understood when you were the age of your child. So if your child's 2 or 3, think back to when you were 2 or 3. Some people might have to get out photo albums, might have to call up mom or grandma and say, do you have any pictures of me when I was 2 or 3? You know, give me some feedback on what I was like when I was 2 or 3. If your kid's 7 or 8, what was I like when I was 7 or 8? What did I understand when I was 7 or 8? What did I think And what did I think was true when I was that age? And if you had a pretty good grasp on sexual things when you were 7, why? What was going on in your life up to or at age 7 that you would know what a penis is? Or that you would understand how sex takes place? Or that you would even know what body parts are or what they look like? You know, was it that you were educated because your parents were doctors? Was it that you were educated because your parents thought it was important for you to know the difference between literally your elbow and your butt? You know, what was going on in your life that you knew the things that you knew? The book, which is not out yet, it will be soon, the book that's called Stop Feeding the Predators, which is what started all of this, the very first sentence in the book is, I met my first penis when I was 3. And I want anyone listening to understand how absolutely appalling that is. That at 3 years old, I knew what a penis was. You know, at 3 years old, I honestly didn't know where my butthole was. How did I know what a penis was? You know, I didn't understand that I had a vagina, but I knew what a penis was. And that's because of the aggressor in my life at that time taught me things that I had no business knowing. He told me and showed me things that a 3-year-old is not capable of understanding that they should not know. And these are things that when children get closer to hitting puberty, they can be given accurate educational information about bodies. But 3-year-olds don't have any business knowing what a full-grown male penis looks like. So when you're talking to your children and you're using sarcasm or you're being goofy, think about what you are teaching them is a standard common thought, or what you're teaching them is something that they should know. When I was raped when I was 3, I didn't tell anyone, partly because I didn't know that I was supposed to, partly because this was an adult male, so he was in charge, so he knew what he was doing, so I didn't have to wonder, I was just a kid. And I had the sense about me, as many children do, that the adults must be right. And that I had to respect what an adult was saying, what an adult was doing, and what the adult was telling me to do. Because I didn't have any perspective otherwise. I had not experienced, and my mom never claimed to be perfect or anything like that, but at 3, I had not experienced my parent telling me mistakes that she had made, or times when she felt uncomfortable and what she did about it. And the best thing that we can do for our kids today is help our kids know that we want to know everything that they think. We want to know everything that they're feeling. I was talking to a woman whose child has been sexually assaulted in the past, and she was wondering, you know, what's the best way to help my daughter emotionally to heal from this? And I said, the very best thing you can do is encourage your daughter to share with you everything that she thinks and feels. And that way, the child feels comfortable disclosing if anything else happened, or if anything happens in the future. You know, when our kids say, my tummy hurts, if we say, well, that's because you ate too many hot dogs. Well, yeah, that might be because it's that they ate too many hot dogs. But what think about what it would do to a child if a child said, "My tummy hurts." And as the adult in their life, we said, "I'm really glad you told me your tummy hurt. Tell me, why do you think your tummy hurts? Is there anything that happened that would make your tummy hurt?" And the child might say, "I don't know. I fell down earlier." "Oh, okay. Did you hit your tummy? Maybe it had nothing to do with the hot dogs." You know, I think as parents, we tend to brush off what our kids say. What's that saying from way back? Children are to be seen and not heard. Well, if you want to raise children that are likely to be sexually victimized, that's a good way to think. You have to help your children know that they have a right to be left alone. You have to teach your children that they have a right to their bodies. They have a right to not be touched unless they want to be. And I'm not suggesting that every parent suddenly becomes paranoid and says, "I'm not going to hug my child unless my child gives me permission." But I do expect parents to talk to their children about, how do you feel when I give you a hug? You know, there may be some children with Asperger's syndrome or with autism, they may hate being hugged. And as a parent, we're trying to be loving. And yet, there are some children that are not comfortable with it. Even though it's a natural thing for your mom or your dad to give you a hug, there are some children that do not like it. And it doesn't mean that they don't love the parent. It means that they're not comfortable with that. If you think of, you know, a person of any age, people are allowed to not enjoy hugs. They might prefer a handshake. When children visit me and when they're leaving, sometimes parents will say, you know, "Give her a hug goodbye." And I say, "That's okay. You don't have to give me a hug goodbye. You can wave from there. Do you want to wave from there?" And oftentimes the kids will say, "Yeah, I want to wave from here." So, okay, and I'll wave. And sometimes they'll say, "Now I want a hug." Okay, it's the child's choice. That's okay. But don't insist that your child behave a certain way. Find out who your child is. You know, educate your child and teach them that they don't have to remain silent about something. As silly as it is, when a child says, "I really hate green beans," and the adult says, "Well, you have to eat them, they're good for you, and you need to get vegetables," we're teaching our children to go against their gut. We're teaching them that they don't count, that they don't matter, and that we're the adult, and that we know better, and we're smarter, and we are completely setting them up to be victimized by someone who says, "Let me touch you here. I know you like that. Let me do this to you. You want me to do this to you." And that instills guilt in the child because it makes them think that the adult must be correct. I know I've given a ton of information. And the best thing I can say is silence is like Thanksgiving for predators. It allows them to just eat up everything that they can. The child is under their control, the parents are under their control, grandparents, counselors, teachers, police. When people don't tell what has happened, when children don't tell, and then sometimes if the children do tell, when those people don't tell other people what has happened, we are protecting the predators. We're protecting the aggressors. We're protecting the people that are doing really mean things to our kids. And that's not nice. I could come up with a whole bunch of other ways to say it. But the bottom line is, our children need to learn who they are, what they like, what they don't like. And sex, sexual touching, sexual contact is not something that children should even be thinking about or knowing about. Sometimes when children disclose, they will disclose with a certain amount of details that is way beyond their age of knowledge of these things. And that oftentimes is how police, counselors, etc. know that this must be true, because the child has disclosed something in detail to where they couldn't possibly have made it up, because they wouldn't have that knowledge unless this actually happened. And I was doing a course with the police department in one of their trainings, and they disclosed what a child said that allowed them to know there was no mistaking that this child knew what happened. The child didn't have the appropriate words for physically what had happened, but the child had a child's interpretation, a child's description that left no doubt about what had taken place. And as parents, as adults, as healthy human beings, we need to protect children, and we need to encourage them to speak up. Do you want the red balloon or do you want the blue balloon? Let them start to determine who they are. Do you want to sleep with your stuffed bear or do you want to sleep with your stuffed puppy? You want to sleep with both? Okay, here's both. You know, let them determine who they are. Let them figure out what they like. I joke with people, because it's too sad to admit that it's true, but I'm 48 years old and I'm just now learning what I actually like. Because when I was a child, I was told what I liked. I was told what I had to do. I was manipulated by people who wanted control over me. And I'm not talking about my mom. I'm talking about sexual assault by other people. You know, mom had her moments when she had ordered pepperoni pizza and I declared I was vegetarian and she said, pick the pepperoni off. You know, that's pretty disrespectful. I'm trying to be vegetarian and you're telling me to eat the grease from pepperoni when I'm saying I'm morally opposed to that. You know, I no longer vegetarian. But at the time, I was trying to be who I wanted to be. And my mom didn't have the patience or the financial means to embrace that. She also said that you only eat one piece of pizza and they're not going to make the pizza with pepperoni on everything except one piece. You know, silly things like that. But when your child is saying that they like something or that they don't like something, embrace it. Let them learn who they are. I have a friend, her daughter is true vegan. You know, if she finds ants in the house, she will capture them gently and ask her mom where's the best place to put them out in the yard, because she doesn't want them in the house because they might get stepped on. And she doesn't know where to put them outside that they won't get stepped on. And this mom totally embraces who her daughter is. And it's just, it's beautiful to see. Her daughter started a food drive. And she was helping stock the food pantry. And this girl, I believe she's 7 now. You know, what 7-year-old thinks about keeping the ants safe? And what parent allows her child the dignity to protect the ants? You know, I love this woman and her family, because they let their children be who they are. You know, now I'm not talking, if your child wants to smear poo all over the walls, obviously you have to say, no, you can't do that. Here's finger paint. And here's a canvas, and you can smear the paint all over the canvas, you know. But let your children find out what they like. Let them find their voice. And when you encourage them to say, I don't like green beans but I'll eat a second helping of carrots. Okay, so they're healthier with carrots than they are with green beans. You know, as a parent, our goal is to help our children be healthy and learn what they like, what they don't like, what they want, what they don't want, what feels good to them, and what feels awkward to them. Standing on a two-step step ladder feels incredibly awkward to me. I feel like I'm going to fall to my death. It's only two steps up. Not a big deal. If I fall, I'm, you know, probably going to laugh and wet myself. But falling off a two-step step ladder is not a big deal, but it makes me so uncomfortable. Because when I'm on a two-step step ladder, there's nothing to hold on to. I don't have anything to put my hands on to feel that sense of security. And yet, I climb 6-foot and 10-foot ladders all the time. I will climb, you know, within two steps to the top, and I'm fine. So just because your child says, I don't like green beans, doesn't mean that they're not going to be healthy eaters. It means that they don't like green beans. And I don't mean to pick on the green bean industry. Personally, I like green beans way better than cooked carrots. Just saying. When you help your children learn who they are and what they like and what they don't like, you're respecting your kids. And when you respect your kids and you let them learn about themselves, the most amazing thing happens is that your children learn to respect themselves, and they are more likely to have healthy relationships later in life because they will already know what they like and what they don't like. And that's not to say that your child's going to end up marrying a carrot lover because they hate green beans and they would only live with a carrot lover. That means that your child would be able to say, I'm going to marry a green bean lover because I like the carrots, and that way we don't have to fight over who gets what. But letting our children have a voice, getting rid of that silence, is the most empowering thing for children. I mean, you want your kids to learn about the world, but if they're afraid to ask, they're not going to learn. And, you know, people talk about corporate world. Well, if your child's afraid to speak up, they're not going to get very far. You know, they might end up being a yes man. They might go half the way for a while, but they're probably not going to be happy because they're not doing what they want to do. You know, empowering our children to learn who they are is what parenting is all about. You know, as the child's growing up, we're learning who we are as a parent, and we're learning who's this little person that's growing up in my life. When children feel like they have rights, when they are respected, when they feel like what they say matters, they are more likely to disclose if they are abused. They are more likely, if they're able, to fight or flight the abuse as opposed to freezing. And that's not to say that if your child is sexually assaulted and they froze, that you're a bad parent. All I'm suggesting is there are things we can do that help our children know how to respond when something happens that they don't like. And if we're always telling our children, you have to do what the adults say, and that's the bulk of our relationship with them, then any adult that sexually assaults them is going to get away with it because we have taught them you have to do what the adults say. Allowing your children to say, I don't like to sleep in the dark. Okay, do you want a lamp on or do you want a nightlight? Do you want the hallway light on or do you want the bathroom light on? Do you want one of those little glow bugs? They've got different pillow pals and things like that that glow. You know, how do you want to not sleep in the dark. And allow them their rights. Allow them their dignity to be who they are. I know growing up, there were lots of girls that hated spiders and screamed when they saw snakes. And I thought snakes were awesome. I would pick up earthworms and hold them in my hand. And, you know, I was, I guess, a weird tomboy girl because I knew that I liked spiders. I knew that I liked snakes. I knew that I liked earthworms and caterpillars. And I didn't understand why these other people ran from them. You know, that's probably the most empowerment that I had as a child, is being allowed to play with all these little ladybugs and tumblebugs and caterpillars and all that silly stuff. I guess, ironically, if I had ever been sexually assaulted by a caterpillar, I would have been able to stand up to them and told them they couldn't. I know. Odd thought. But I'm just trying to emphasize, when we let our children be who they are, when we let them have their voice, the Thanksgiving for predators is over. And children will know that what they say matters. And a child who is sexually assaulted, one of the most healing things for them is to know that they've been heard, that they are believed, and that their words matter. They will be protected. As an adult, think of having a boss tell you that you have to work with so-and-so. And you really don't like so-and-so, you have different religious beliefs, you have different body chemistry, maybe they wear a ton of cologne and you can't stand the smell of it, whatever. You know, when you're thinking of your children, put yourself in the perspective of you and a boss. Am I bossing my child around simply to exert my authority, or is there a reason that my child needs to comply with my demands? Help your child find their voice. Help them know that what they say matters. If a child tells you that they've been sexually assaulted and you are confused, reach out further. And if that person is confused, doesn't know what to do, reach out again. You can tell the police. You can call Children's Services and say, I've got a situation, I don't know what to do. You can get a hold of your minister, your pastor, your counselor, an adult friend, someone that you trust. Sometimes it's one of your children's friends' parents. Just somebody that you can go to and talk. Call a rape helpline. Keep telling until someone helps you. Because when you tell that a child's been sexually assaulted, you break that silence and you take away the power that that aggressor has been holding over your child and over possibly your family. Legally and morally, it is always the responsibility of the adult to set and respect boundaries. And when you allow your child to have carrots versus green beans, but you insist that they pick one vegetable, you are setting a healthy boundary. You are giving your child respect to let them decide what they want. And you're giving your child a voice. You're letting them know that they matter. And when children feel that their words matter, the silence is broken. The aggressors are no longer going to be able to get away with the abuse. And this is how we stop sexual assault of children. We empower children to know that they're respected and that they're believed and that their words count. You have been listening to Stop Feeding the Predators on City of Angels Recovery Radio. And healing starts here.